Hello, everyone.
Hello.
Hi. Hello.
Glad to have you here, the great persuaders of the world who are on the phone call. My name is Kurt Mortensen. Welcome aboard. Today is August 4th, and this is where the rubber meets the road. Let's talk about some things that will help you right now in the world of persuasion and influence, and then we'll open it up for questions. Last week, we tried to focus a little bit on persuasion and influence over the phone. This week, based on comments, let's focus on how to be more persuasive through emails. What we're finding is people, as you know, are emailing more and more. They're texting more and more. It's vital to business success. And many of your influence attempts will start with email. And it can really help you or hurt you. And I've done deals where you've never seen a person's face, never talked to them over the phone. A lot of times it's done via email. And I think that trend's going to continue. But it's different than face-to-face. It's different than a group. It's different than over the phone. And let's talk about what we know about persuading and influencing via emails. Now, we do know when you look at, say, for example, the negotiation process, and email communication is, the great thing about email is that you can control your language. You can pick the right words. You can have a lot more time to think about it, to reread it, how you're going to say it. So email really helps us in that department. On the other side, sometimes when we answer real fast, we tend to be more impulsive. We're less restrained, and we tend to jab at people a little bit more. In fact, it's 100 times more likely to jab at somebody through an email than it is face-to-face. Again, pros and cons here, but this is what we also know about negotiations and email. That email does take longer, obviously, than a face-to-face negotiation. We're less satisfied by coming to an agreement through an email than we are face-to-face. It's just more satisfying for us to talk to somebody face-to-face. It is more impersonal, and we don't get that strong relationship that we do face-to-face. So my recommendation is, which one should you use? Well, first of all, it depends on their personality, but I would probably want to say all of the above. You know, start with a little email, do a little phone, and then maybe end up face-to-face. And I think the best thing about email is it creates great records. Once that email is sent, it's a record. What you've agreed on, what you're talking about, and sometimes that's a little more difficult face-to-face or over the phone. So I want to give you some tools right now to help you with your email, influential emails, because too many people just write an email and don't think much about it. There's a lot of influence and persuasion going on in the email. The first thing I want you to think about when you do an email is, what is your call to action? With any persuasive attempt, whether it be over the phone, face-to-face, or with a group, the first thing you always do, and this is a huge mistake for a lot of people, is what is your call to action? What do you want them to do? And then once you know exactly what that is, your whole email, your whole presentation is geared around that call to action. The thing is make it as simple and easy as possible. We're finding that the more things you have them do, or if it seems too complicated, you tend to lose a lot of people. If you can put a hyperlink in, they can click and it goes right to the page where you want them to go, that is a lot more persuasive than having them cut and paste it and opening up a new window. If you look at places like Amazon, I don't know if you're familiar with this or not, Amazon one click. Once you logged in, you want to buy something, you click one button, it dramatically increases sales because you don't have to put in credit card or information. You've bought it. Make it as simple and easy as possible. Because if you make it complicated, if you make it hard, you're going to get, well, I need to think about it. And you do not want that. So make your call to action simple and easy to understand. What do you want them to do? Do you want to click on a hyperlink? Do you want to get some more information? Do you want permission to call them? What is your call to action? Simple and easy. That is your focus here. That is the very, very first thing you do is, what do you want them to do? What is your call to action? The next one is your subject line. You need a powerful subject line. You know, just like I know, as you go through your email, you're looking at the subject line. If it doesn't grab you, then you don't open it. You delete it without opening it. Or sometimes you keep it as new, thinking you're going to open it, and you still never open it. If you've ever studied advertising, this is your headline. Just like a magazine ad, okay, you've got 2 or 3 seconds to grab their attention. And so what is in your headline? This is how it gets open. So the basic thing here is how they're going to benefit. You need to have some type of benefit statement, something they're going to gain by working with you, by doing business with you, by talking to you, by responding to you. What is your benefit? It's almost just as important to spend as much time on your subject line as it is the whole email. That's how it gets opened. If they don't recognize who you are, it's not going to get opened. Now, one thing I've noticed with social validation, the law of social validation, the subject line, is if you want to get opened, mention somebody's name that they know. So-and-so told me to send you an email. Put that in the subject line. They asked me to call. They asked you to give me this information. Dramatically increases the chances they're going to open up that email. Because if they're not opening it up, it's not very persuasive. Then, as you get started in writing your email, you need to solve a problem. You're persuaders, you're problem solvers. So as you start in that very first paragraph, probably the very first sentence, what problem are you solving? That you have their best interest in mind. Too many people start their emails off on about you and on how you're going to benefit. It's about them. It's about their problem. They don't care about you. But you have to kind of show you that you have their best interest in mind. You're going to solve their problem. It's going to be a win-win that you care. You got to come across like you're caring. And in the world famous, you've heard this before, what's in it for me? That's in the very first couple sentences. What's in it for me? Why should I care? What problem are you going to solve? Now, if you're going business to business, it's either are you going to make them money or save them money. But a lot of people are interested in health and saving money. Those are problems that you can solve. Those are benefits that you can interject. Another one where we see people tend to blow it is the old sense of urgency, the scarcity, or the what they've been called psychological reactance. Meaning, if there is no reason for them to act now, to call now, to respond now, human nature says and science says they won't. You need to give them a clear and valid reason to call. And make sure it's believable. If you say, well, there's only 100 left, you've been to stores and read emails where you're like, yeah, I don't think so. Or you've seen emails where they have a countdown clock. People really aren't buying into those too many. They're not buying into that much. So you still need to have it, but it's been abused and overused. So if you're going to do this, which you need to, there needs to be a valid reason why there's scarcity or urgency, and make sure it's something that benefits them. Now, I've always taught you when you use scarcity, you have to act today or this week, make sure it's believable, make sure it's truthful, but also make sure that you can buffer it with some type of reward. Let me explain that. Scarcity has been abused and overused. When you use it the right way, it's very powerful. But sometimes you can buffer it with a reward. So you can say something like, look, this offer's good for 3 more days. This is all we have left in inventory. And when you can do this, what we're going to do is double your consulting from 2 months to 4 months. So we're finding when you do use that scarcity, that sense of urgency, you always want to buffer it with some type of reward. Look, the offer on your home is good for 3 days. And if you can do it in 3 days, we are going to go ahead and give you the homeowner's insurance, however you want to do that. But there has to be some type of scarcity for them to act now. Because the worst thing on an email, a persuasive email, is for them to, oh, I'll think about it, I'll do it later, I'll come back to it. Then you've probably lost them forever. Next one is, I want you to build the value, not the price. When you're starting to communicate with email, you know the knee-jerk reaction is, well, how much? How much? Because the human brain wants to know, okay, how much is it? What do you compare it to? Remember, it's up to you as a great persuader for you to build the value. Don't fight over price. Any rookie can fight over price. And price is only an issue 6% of the time. But 66% of the time, people say it's too expensive because that's a knee-jerk reaction, and they know it gets rid of you. Rarely do we buy on price. If we always bought on price, you'd eat at McDonald's every day. If we always bought on price, you'd probably would have bought a Yugo. Does anybody remember the Yugos? I think they were made out of Adobe clay. I mean, they were the cheapest car ever introduced to the United States, and they didn't make it because they were way too cheap. So are they comparing your product, your service, or idea to a used car or to a Rolls Royce? It's up to you. If you keep getting it's too expensive, it's because you haven't built the value. When the value's there, it becomes a no-brainer. So as you talk about your product or service, you need to understand you build a value. And you need to understand yourself as a persuader that you're worth it. You're worth it. You should probably figure out how much you're worth and add a zero to it. Okay? Because you're worth it. If you don't persuade them to do business with you, is it fair to say somebody that has half your skills, half your talents, half your morals might take their money and take advantage of them without performing a good service? Is that possible?
Yes.
Is that probable?
Yes.
So I'm feeling that you have a moral and ethical obligation to persuade these people, because if you don't, someone else will. Someone will take their money and not do a good job. And part of this is understanding you're building the value here. For some reason, when it comes to people's own product or service, they discount their value. Don't do that. Don't let them sense that. You want to build the value and not fight on price. Next one is, I want you to start benchmarking. You need to create a tickler file. You need to take a look at the emails coming to you that work, that you like. Go to different websites. Get onto their email list. See how persuasive they are. See what's working for them. That's how you become a great email writer. Look at other people's email. Start collecting spam. Take a look at them. If you see the same type of spam over and over again, what does that tell you?
It works.
It's working. If you keep getting offers from Nigeria, okay, for $2 million, you think, who would fall for that? But if you keep getting them, what is that saying?
Working.
It's working. So read through them. Go through them. Pick out the sentences that you like. Just become a student of persuasion and start collecting them. So if you're in real estate, start going to different real estate sites and get onto their newsletters and see how persuasive they are and see what they say, or network marketing, whatever you do. Go out there and benchmark. Perfectly legit, perfectly ethical, and perfectly legal. That's how it is. You don't copy it word for word. You benchmark five or six different things, and it becomes yours. Consumers are very skeptical, and email marketing changes monthly. What used to work last year doesn't work anymore, so it's always changing. So get a feel for what's happening out there. And if spam bothers you, set up a separate account and make it that your spam folder. You know, all the spam, all the newsletters and spam come to one place. And so when you need to benchmark or look at something, it's all right there for you. I would recommend it. Also, you need to understand that you need to understand the law of verbal packaging. What we're finding out is that every word you use will attract or distract the person that you're trying to persuade via email. Remember, when we talk about persuasion and influence, that most persuasion involves a subconscious trigger. It just feels right. And part of that is the word you use. Because you're reading it, and it feels right, it doesn't feel right, you like them, you don't like them, you want to do it, you don't want to do it. Could be the words that you use. So I want you to become very good at looking at every word that you use. We know that this is the leverage of language. And with email, this is more important than anything because that's all you have, is your written words. We know that people who use the right words come across as more credible, competent, and convincing. We know that words affect our attitudes, our beliefs, and our emotions. We know this. Should you use the biggest, most complicated word possible, or should we use the easiest, simplest word possible? What do you think is more? What do you think is the most persuasive?
The easiest.
Use simple words. When you look at a newspaper, what grade level is a newspaper written at?
Eighth grade.
Even at that high, it might be sixth grade, depending on the newspaper. It's very basic. So use simplified words. And you want to make sure, too, that you look at words, for example, like if. If is a very weak word. It's more persuasive when you use when. If you call me back. If you're interested. No. When you call me back. When you're interested. Try. No, you don't say try. Say will. You know when your friends or family say try, it's not going to happen. Say will. We don't say could. We say can. You're like, well, those are very similar. No, they're not. Can is much more persuasive in writing than could. Then you have words like but. That's a word you probably don't want to use because it negates your whole email. Everything before it's been negated. It is now gone. It's been negated. You don't say but. What is a better word than but?
And.
Yeah.
However.
And. However. Then you use power words like because. We've talked about this before, where because triggers a subconscious trigger, that you're going to give them a valid reason. Does everybody remember the photocopier study with Elaine Langer? You guys remember that one?
Well,
let me tell you. There was a study done with Elaine Langer. She's a social psychologist at Harvard. And she went to the library to see if she could cut in line at the photocopier. Well, she'd wait until five or six people are in line. And what would happen is the first time around, she'd go up and say, excuse me, may I cut in line? I'm in a rush. Okay, very basic. It was around 60% of the people let her in. The next time around, she says, excuse me, may I cut in line? Because I'm in a rush. That's all she added was the word because. It went from 60% up to about 94%, just by adding that word. Now, here's where it gets really interesting. The third time around, she says, excuse me, may I cut in line because I need to make some copies? Well, duh. Why else would she be there? But it still stayed, it dropped a couple points, it still stayed in the 90th percentile, about 91% of people who complied. Every word matters. I think Mark Twain said it best, the difference between the right word and the wrong word is the difference between lightning and a lightning bug. Okay, it matters. Kentucky Fried Chicken changed their name. How come? Anybody know? What's the bad word in the word in Kentucky Fried Chicken?
Fried.
Fried. Yeah, they took it out. Now what's the name of Kentucky Fried Chicken?
KFC.
KFC. They started importing a wonderful fish who tasted really good, better than mahi-mahi, better than swordfish, out of South America to the United States, but nobody would order it off a menu. It was one of the best fish out there. But the challenge is, on the menu it said Patagonian toothfish. Okay, does that sound good? See? See what that triggers? Nobody would buy it. Doesn't matter what people say, you don't order a Patagonian toothfish. So they changed the name. And what'd they change it to? Chilean sea bass.
Sea bass.
So many of you have eaten a Patagonian toothfish and probably liked it. There's no longer used cars because that has a bad association trigger to it. Now what do they call it?
Pre-owned.
I even saw one that was pre-loved. Not sure what that meant, but that's what they use. We don't fire people. They're right size. They're downsized. When I give my students at the college a final that has a bad word to it, final, so we call it a celebration of knowledge. Doesn't work very well, but we have a lot of fun with it. That's how important this is. And here's another study, and then we'll open it up for questions and give you some homework. They had two groups of people, and they had this hamburger. It was the same hamburger for both groups. The both groups didn't know this, but it was the same hamburger. So the first group, they said, here's some hamburger. We want you to try it out for quality and for taste. It's 25% lean. Or, I'm sorry, 25% fat. The other group, they said, here, try out this hamburger. It's 75% lean. Okay, same hamburger. One group was 25% fat. The other was 75% lean. What happened? You know what happens. The 25% fat group's all greasy, didn't like it, don't want any more. The 75% lean was all, oh, it's good. Can we have some more? We really liked it. Where did you get it? Same hamburger. Every word matters. So as you look at your emails this week, this is what I want you to do. Start collecting good spam. Don't have to eat spam, but start collecting spam. And put it into a separate folder, a separate email address if you need to. What I like to do, because this is what I do for a living, is I go to different places and I actually put in different names and I keep track of it to see where they're selling my name and what's happening. Yeah. Have it go into a separate folder. People get so tense with spam sometimes. I think it's a good thing. If it's getting through, it means something. It might be something worth looking at. Now, not the nasty ones. I'm not talking about those. I'm talking about the ones that have legitimate offers or hopefully legitimate offers and getting to you. So create that tickler file. Start collecting spam. And I want you to write an email and then the second time really reread it. A lot of times we just zap it off, but reread it for spelling errors, reread it for word choice, reread it for the things that we talked about today, and really, really help in what you're able to do. Because a lot of influence is happening via email nowadays. And if you can really get through on the email, become more persuasive, you'll become much more successful. Okay? Any questions about what we talked about today?
Yes. Do you have any recommendations on closing out the email before you send it, like signature or?
I like, please send me your money. does that work for you? Well, if it's the first one, you probably want to be kind of cordial. One that I will throw out there that's interesting when you study the law of expectations and kind of presuppositions, we're noticing that when you say thanks in advance, now you don't want to say it every time with somebody. You don't want to say it every time, but if you want to increase the chances they're going to do what you're asking them to do on a voicemail over email, I would say thanks in advance. That's helpful when you want to use that one. But being cordial, appreciate your help, let me know what you need next, is always good to have. But there's not a specific one besides thanks in advance that works really well. But a lot of people don't even think about that. They keep it in their signature file and it's automatic. But sometimes you might want to adjust it depending on the person you're sending it to. Next question. Anybody? While you're thinking of questions, let me add one thing here. In NLP, if you've ever studied NLP, which is neuro-linguistic programming, there's something called a presupposition, which is basically the way you write your email, even the way you talk to people, you're talking like they've already accepted your offer, they're already doing business with you, just subtle things as, when we help you, when your home is saved, and this is just a bump in the road. And it's, you have to practice when you talk to people and send emails that you're talking like they're doing business, that you've solved their problem, that you're helping them out. It's just a subtle, easy thing for you to implement, but that also dramatically increases your ability to influence. Any questions about this or anything that you're running into, I'm more than happy to take those. That's what we're here for.
What's a good text to read on NLP?
A good text. There are quite a well. Anything. NLP is interesting because there's a lot of wacky people doing NLP out there. I mean, some of the stuff is way out there. I think a good start. Do you have? I would start with the Law of Expectations. You have that CD?
Okay.
I'd start there. That'll give you some fundamental NLP strategies that you can start implementing right now. without overwhelming to it, because if you start getting deep into NLP, you start going around in circles and drooling on yourself. and we don't want that to happen.
No, thank you.
You bet. Any other questions? Those are easy. All right. Was it helpful?
Yes. Yes.
Okay. So do the homework, though. Start getting the tickler files. And if you're reading an email or something and it's persuading you, put it in your tickler file. Take a look at it. Analyze it. Part of the thing of becoming a great persuader is monitoring other persuaders and other emails and watching them, seeing what they do. Watching infomercials. Those can be very persuasive. You see the same infomercial on every night, it's working. And you should be able to analyze why it's working. And that'll help you out in the persuasion process. So that's what I want you to do this week. And we'll focus on a few more of these issues next week. With that being said, are there any last-minute questions or comments?
Kurt.
Yeah.
What is your website to go back and review this?
It's supposed to be persuasioniq.com/Kurt Call, but I have a rogue web developer, and they haven't been putting them up. But they are being recorded. We're trying to transfer to a new website with the webinar format, but for now, if you want the recording, just send me an email at Kurt, K-U-R-T, at persuasioniq.com, and I'll send you the link, because the service we're using now changes the link every week.
Okay, appreciate it.
That's probably the best thing to do until we figure it out.
Would you repeat that email address, please?
You bet. Kurt, K-U-R-T, Kurt, at persuasioniq.com. All right, well, everyone have a great week. Go out there and persuade with power, and we'll talk to you next week.
Thanks, Scott.
You bet. Good night, everyone.
Good night.
We'll see you. Good night.